Hello, guys, girls, people.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Back at you.
How do we instill some enthusiasm into this group? How do we inject some? How do we bring contagiasm here? You know, you guys are at a point where this was all new. You're doing things that are hard. I'm asking you to be introspective, you know, really hold up the mirror to move your ego out of the way. And at first it's uncomfortable, but now hopefully you're past that point and we should really start to connect. So I wonder who here will be courageous enough or extroverted enough, even if you're an introvert, to tell us one thing about you that we don't know. Who's willing to just step up and go, hey, my name is, and let me tell you this one thing that you don't know. Just one.
Hey, this is Brant.
Brant?
And I can do a backflip.
Very cool. You can do a backflip just standing?
Yep.
And on command. Like if somebody goes, hey, do a backflip, you can do that?
I can do it.
That is very cool. Did you ever miss?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You learn with a swimming pool?
No, I learned on the ground.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So you had a few bumps and bruises on the way to learning, I would guess, right?
I landed on my head a few times, yep.
Well, okay. Who else wants to? Thank you for that, Brent.
This is Rick, and I think the furthest I ever swam in one distance was 14 miles.
Nice.
Holy smokes.
What, a shark was chasing you? Why'd you swim 14 miles?
It was when I was in the military, so it was part of the training, but yeah, it was a 14-mile swim.
Wow. What branch of the military were you in?
Navy. I was actually, I'm a former Navy SEAL.
Wow. So was that was San Diego? Was that where you were training?
Yes. Yeah. It was at San Clemente Island was where we did the long swim at. You know, it was off the coast there, but yeah, that's where the main training was, in right outside of San Diego and Coronado.
And is it as bad as we've heard? As tough? Is it as grueling? You know, where you're out in the rain and you're on the beach and you're holding something over your head and then you have to swim and hold your breath. Is that real?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
So sometimes Hollywood, like in the early SEAL team movies, Hollywood took a lot of liberties and things got a little weird and stuff. But some of the more recent ones have been pretty good. Yeah, they depicted life pretty good with that.
Very cool. But I bet you can't do a backflip.
Oh, I can. It just won't land properly.
Should I go for one more? Can I get one more? Rick, do you think we can get one more person in the group to just tell
I
us anything about
it? I think there's one more in there that's like it's like on the verge to say something, but they're just teetering back and forth, and they're afraid if they're going to start talking, somebody's going to be speaking at the same time, so I say just go for it.
See, and I think it's the other extreme. I think there's somebody who just doesn't want to do it, and I would challenge that person to do it.
Is Sandra on the call?
All right, we'll take that as a no.
I'll take that as a no.
So that's all we got. Who just joined us?
Said that there were 10 people on the call. So I know
yeah, there's 14 now. Who just joined us?
Sandy.
Sandy. Wow, you must have some sort of psychic connection to this group because your name was just mentioned. Because we're asking you right now to tell us one thing about you that we don't know.
One thing about me that nobody
knows. Nothing like walking right into it, right?
I'm working on getting a virtual clinic online.
Working on getting a virtual clinic online. Okay. Good. So I really want you guys to connect because ultimately what happens in a group like this, and Sandy, I know you mentioned that you were looking for a mastermind group, and we can talk about that a little bit. But you guys have each other right now, and as I was starting to say at the beginning, you don't know each other well. But everybody here has something that you don't. Everybody. And, you know, I don't know that many of you will ever have the need to learn how to do a backflip or swim 14 miles or want to start a virtual practice. But there are experiences that you're having that somebody else here had. There are fears that you have that somebody else here had or has. And if you start to connect, if you really just start to completely be unguarded and just post things on the board when I ask you to, it doesn't have to be a work of literature, nobody's judging you, but then you guys really start to connect and you become the mastermind group. So I want to start today with a review of a business principle that I think is really foundational, and I call it the prosperity formula. And the reason I call it that is because it really is. The prosperity formula. Because when all three pieces of this formula are working in balance, remember that word balance, revenues can only grow. You cannot have all three of these working and not grow revenues. And sometimes we feel like we have a million things to do, but when we look at the simplicity of the formula, we only have three. It doesn't mean we only have three tasks, but in terms of categories, what we have to do to establish prosperity, if we understand the formula, there are only three things: the reach, the funnel, the spillover. The reach, the funnel, the spillover. This becomes a part of Be Better Language. The prosperity formula is the reach plus the funnel plus the spillover. That's it. That is the essence of building a business that prospers. The reach answers the question, how do you let people know you exist? So sitting in your office, even if you're trying Facebook ads and Google AdWords, isn't really likely to consistently build your reach. Joining the Chamber of Commerce or some networking group probably will not consistently build your reach. There are many ways you can. Writing an article in a local publication can build your reach. Getting a segment on a local news show can build your reach. But talking to five people a day builds your reach, and you can all do that. So I know nobody jumps on that and embraces it right away, but what I also know is when people start doing it, they find their business increases, and they like that. And then they find that they like people, and they're talking to a lot of people and meeting new people, and things are just happening, and referrals start showing up. So the reach is a vital piece of this. And I'm not saying reach equals five people a day. I'm just saying that's one way. I mentioned some other ways. But some of your focus, let's say a third, has to be on how do I get more people to know I exist. And then the step beyond that is how do I get more of those people to know that I have a solution for them. But you got to get the first part before you get the second part. So how will you get people to know you exist? And I've spoken to enough chiropractors, health practitioners, some MDs lately who've gone to a cash model and stepped away from insurance. And they're frustrated because people aren't coming in. People aren't coming in. You know, it's an office, and it's a staff, and people aren't coming in. And here's what I'm going to tell them. People will not come in unless they know you exist. Oh, but I have my sign outside. That doesn't mean they know you exist. If you have a sign that says chiropractor, that's not unique. They don't even notice it. Maybe if their back hurts, they'll notice it because that's the association they have. So you've got to be somewhat creative and somewhat aggressive in creating a reach that is consistent. If you're not by nature extroverted and this scares you, get over it. You're in business. You're in a people business. So the only way you grow your business is by letting more people know you exist. So that's a vital piece of the prosperity formula. And again, many ways to do it. Advertising is one. The reason I don't prefer advertising as the number one choice is it costs money. Many of the others don't. Doing weekly talks at Whole Foods if they get an audience for you. That's building your reach. Speaking at schools, that builds your reach. Why would I speak at schools, Phil? You mean elementary school? Yeah, I mean any school. Elementary school, the kids aren't going to be my patients. Well, I used to say every kid has two parents. I don't say that anymore. But every kid has somebody that they go home to. Every kid has somebody who's supposed to look at their report card. It's a mom, it's a dad, it's a mom and a dad, it's a dad and a dad, of a mom and a mom. But everybody has somebody at home. So what I've learned to do is speak at schools and send every kid home with an envelope, a little letter to the parent. And not only do the parents then get the letter, and they're impressed by you because they believe you're the person the school chose to speak, but the teachers are also impressed by you. So we could spend the whole call with me giving you ideas, but I want you to understand the concept of the reach. You have to find what works for you or what combination works for you. Without the reach, prosperity becomes very difficult. The second part is the funnel. The funnel prevents the energy drain. I know all of you know the energy drain. It's when you suddenly get a wave of potential or new clients or patients. And now you have to sit down with everyone and explain and assess and review and then do the thing you hate most, sell, convince, persuade. So if you're going to get 20 new patients, customers, clients, and you're going to spend 30 minutes with each one, that's 10 hours of your time. If you do those hours for free, if you call them free consultations, that's 10 hours that you're not getting paid for. If you charge, okay, you're still getting paid for the 10 hours, but it took you 10 hours to talk to 20 people. What if you could talk to all 20 of those people in 1 hour? The potential outcome is 20 new patients from 1 hour investment. So that's what I mean by the funnel. When people find out you exist and they call or they go to your website and they say, send me an email, or they want to sign up for your newsletter, you invite them to your funnel. Now, you don't call it the funnel. They don't know what that means. Don't say, come to my funnel. But we call it a funnel because it filters people through. So out of that 20, there might be 12 who are just deadbeats. They're not going to do it no matter what. They'll take anything for free. They just don't really have the interest in spending money. Maybe there are 4 that were really just curious. So that leaves 6 out of the 20, and those 6 become patients. So we funnel them through. Now, as this starts to work, and it does work, because if you're building your reach, then more people are coming to your funnel. And what is the funnel? It can be a cooking class. It can be a seminar. It can be a workshop. But it's something where people have interest, and they're not going to meet you one-on-one because there's a premium for that. But they're going to meet you, and they're going to connect with you, and they're going to speak to you, and they're going to hear you, and they're going to be able to ask you questions. But they're not taking advantage of you. You're delivering valuable information. I believe it's better if there's a money exchange for the funnel. So in other words, if I'm going to conduct private seminars, when I say private, I mean not at a Whole Foods, not at a corporation, but in my office, I would charge people anywhere between $5 and $35. I want them to pay something for a couple of reasons. One is if they pay, they show up. That's one reason. And you're going to learn this the hard way if you haven't yet. If they don't pay, they're not coming. Even if you call to confirm and you go, listen, I just want you to know we only have one seat left and you're taking that seat, and please, please, please make sure that you're coming if you tell me you are. I'll be there. They usually don't come. And I don't think they're lying to you. I think what happens is in the moment, they have nothing on the line. They've got to have a little bit of skin in the game. Do you have to charge for your funnel? No. I see people who do it successfully, but they play the numbers. They say, if I have 60 people sign up for my seminar, I can count on 15 showing. And they're okay with that. I also like the idea of charging, because if you charge $20 and you get 50 people, you're bringing in enough money to just justify financially the hour of your time you just spent. I said there are two reasons. One is they show up. The second is it pre-qualifies the audience. In other words, if I'm going to ask somebody for $1,200 or $6,000 ultimately to get them to a place of being well, if they're not willing to spend $20, they're not going to spend $6,000. So it qualifies them. Now, I'm not saying if they spend $20, it means they'll spend $6,000, but we're keeping out the people who just want something for free. And those become the drains. And the ones who come in for a consultation and they go, but just one more question, but let me just ask you this. But now I want to ask you something about my husband, but can I show you my foot? Well, how come it hurts when I do this? Those are just drains. And you've all met them. They've taken from you. Not because they're mean, because you let them. So the reach and funnel creates a very efficient influx of new people. The people who are not interested in moving past that event, that seminar, that class, that workshop, hopefully they still got some really great value. They think highly of you, and if they need you down the road, great. And if they talk to somebody else who has an issue or a pain that you discussed, they'll send them to you. So the reach and the funnel. And I want to tell you this. This is fail-proof. If you really do what I'm telling you, you really cannot fail. The only way you can fail is to decide that I don't understand your model, I don't understand your business, I don't understand your demographic, and this will never work. If you make that decision, I can't make any promises. But I can promise you this. If you do this, if you get the reach and the funnel and the spillover in balance at a high level, prosperity is a guarantee. Okay, so I covered the reach, the funnel. What is the spillover? I want you to imagine that this process of the reach and the funnel gains momentum. So now if you can envision the reach like a big pitcher pouring little tiny marbles into a funnel, and the marbles are working their way through. And at first, the pitcher just dumps two marbles, and then three at a time, and then five at a time, and then more and more and more and more. Well, that means your reach is building and your funnel is building. And sooner or later, there are so many people who want to go the next step and work with you, but you can't take them because there's only so much of you to go around. So you say, I am now booked from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. I cannot take any more. So now the bottom of the funnel is closed. The pitcher keeps pouring the marbles and they're spilling over. So the spillover is, how do you get those marbles to turn into money? So the spillover answers the question, how can you benefit financially by helping people that do not take your personal time? The spillover. How, after they go through the funnel, can they become customers, clients, or patients without having to infringe upon your time? The spillover becomes real. It becomes palpable when you have a staff, or better yet, when you have an apprentice. And we started moving toward this, if you remember. When you have an apprentice, all of a sudden, you unclog the bottom of the funnel. Because you say, yes, I've taken on all that I'm willing to take on based on my ideal calendar, but my apprentice just gave me 30 more hours a week to fill. And that handles a spillover. So the beauty of this is, on the days you choose not to go in, you're making money. And some of you have that now. So build it bigger. Because remember I said high level, but in balance. So usually one will be falling below the other two, the reach, the funnel, the spillover, and you got to try to work to keep them in balance and raise it up to a higher level. And again, you cannot fail. Does the spillover have to be hiring an apprentice? No. No, there are many ways. And when you start to really open up to thinking this way, you'll discover some. But an apprentice is a good one. Someone you teach whatever you need to teach them to provide the service that you are paid for. Now, you can also create a spillover with web-based programs where you pre-record them, where they're automated, video-based programs, or books. You sell books. That becomes your spillover. No, he's not taking any new patients, but buy his book. Or you can bring in subcontractors for different services. But I want you to picture all those marbles spilling over the funnel, and you want to have some way of scavenging them for two reasons. One, so you help them, and two, so you build your prosperity. This is not selfish in any way. Growth with integrity. That's a plaque that sits on my desk. I have moved over the years from office to office, from home to home. That's the one thing that has come with me. Growth with integrity. And to me, that means that I can only prosper at a higher level by helping more people or helping people at a higher level. So if you live your life that way, don't you deserve the reward? So when I talk about prosperity, this is not selfish. This is what you deserve, assuming you are thrilling people, assuming you have quality service to deliver. Somebody just joined us or joined back in, and there's a little bit of noise. I don't know if you're outside or driving, but can you hit star six? Thank you. And whoever that was, if you want to ask a question, of course, star six to unmute. So the reach, the funnel, the spillover. If you can think of your business as the interplay Between those three moving parts, you begin to get a sense of how you can move to true prosperity. Any questions about that? Because I have one for you. So any questions based on anything I shared yet so far?
All good so far.
Then I have a question for you. What do we mean by prosperity? I've used that word a number of times. So before we use it again, let's understand what we mean. I make it a point when I discuss this topic with altruistic health professionals to remind you it's not selfish. And the reason I do that is because so often altruistic health professionals don't like that. They like it conceptually, but it's not in their language. It sounds selfish. It sounds like, what about me? And I think it's time you get a little what about me. So what do we mean by prosperity? I don't really think, if somebody understands the word, I don't really think there's ever a time where somebody goes, nope, I don't want that. I could see if I said to somebody, would you like to drive a Ferrari? No, I don't want that. I'm not materialistic. It's not important to me. I don't want to have all that money and risk if somebody hits my car. You know, that I understand. I don't really need a big diamond. It's not me. It's too gaudy. Somebody might steal it. It makes me a target. That I understand. So when people associate prosperity with materialistic greed, at times they go, ah. But if they really understand it, I don't think there's anybody who goes, nope, don't want that. It's almost like if I said, who wants to feel good? Are there any people who go, nah, I don't want that. So what do we mean by prosperity? Can somebody take a shot at it?
So I think that, I guess, since it's such like an individual thing, I would say, to broad base it, prosperity would be anything that would allow somebody their freedom.
Good.
So, yeah, so it can kind of be in any direction. It'd be, you know, freedom to travel, you know, freedom to go back to school, freedom to buy the big house, go materialistic or go more spiritual, you know, freedom to donate more to their church or be involved and stuff. So, yeah, so I guess kind of to give one definition, I think that would kind of like maybe just start it off there.
That's good, and that's exactly what that is, that's starting it off. Because think about this. If somebody hates their job, and they come in one day and the boss says, you're fired, you're free, don't come in here anymore. I don't think they feel prosperous, right? So freedom
exactly.
is certainly one piece of it, but there's got to be some other elements, correct?
Correct.
Anybody else?
For me,
there it is. That's the condition you guys were worried about earlier. One person jumps in and another does at the same time. Okay, I heard female, male, so ladies first.
Oh, thank you. Well, for me, prosperity would mean, yes, the freedom, but also the ability and the security of knowing that if something were to happen tomorrow, I don't have to freak out and say, okay, how am I going to deal with this? I realize there's always going to be issues that will come up in everyday life, but like if my house burnt down or I got into a car accident, for me, prosperity would not be worrying about how am I going to pay for a new car or how am I going to work.
So if you had freedom and if you had a relative who just put money in your way whenever something bad happened, would you then feel prosperous?
Yes and no. It would take the weight off as far as financially would go, but I wouldn't have actual satisfaction because I wouldn't feel
okay,
like
so
I
hold
deserve.
On, hold on. So satisfaction is a piece of this then, right?
Yes.
So we have freedom, we have security, we have satisfaction sneaking in. Anything else?
Fulfillment.
Good. Good. And I would really like to hear somebody just say finance. I would like to hear somebody say money and realize that there is a major barrier. And I look, I've lived it myself until I changed it. I went through it early in my career. And I realized, looking back, I've learned so much. And I remember when I got my first six-figure salary and a secretary and an expense account. I was working for a major health club corporation, traveling all over the country. And I walked away from it to start a personal training business. And I realize now I wasn't comfortable with all that money at that time. That was my perception. Now, consciously, no. But when I think back, I think, man, I could have just skyrocketed up, but instead I felt like I had to go down. I felt like I had to be more pure, more true. I had to get back in touch with helping people. So for some reason, I couldn't equate that in my head with making money. I needed to pay my bills. But I just felt deep down that there was something wrong because my mission is to help people. So if they're giving me a lot of money, man, I must be focused on the wrong thing. And, you know, thankfully I got past that and it wasn't easy, but I did. And I've learned, and I've had the opportunity to do the same for other people. But I realize this whenever I work with an altruistic group. When I talk to salespeople and I ask, what is prosperity, every single person tells me something about money. When I talk to personal trainers, chiropractors, DOs, they never put money in the equation. Isn't that interesting? So I want you to be okay putting that piece in. And, you know, you sort of dance around it a little bit. You know, I want freedom, okay? I want security. You know, if a tragedy hits, I want to be okay. But it's really interesting to me how managers, entrepreneurs, salespeople put money above all in the description of prosperity, and the altruist put it sort of at the bottom. And I want you guys to get past that right now. Making money is a piece of being prosperous. So I want to give you a dictionary definition. Prosperity, a successful, flourishing, or thriving condition. Successful, flourishing, or thriving condition, and then it goes on to say, especially in financial respects. Living with a sense of good fortune. That seems like a very real, usable definition to me. So is there anybody at this point who's not okay with the financial piece of it? And be honest. You know, if there's anybody who's going, look, I didn't join this group to make more money. I joined this group so I can help people at a higher level. You know, share that now. I'd like to know.
Well, Phil, when I spoke in the beginning and talked about the freedom, I mean, honestly, that's kind of the core that I see taking me there is the
right.
Finances. I mean, I know there's a lot of ways, you know, business satisfaction and, you know, satisfaction with helping people, but, you know, that satisfaction without the finances, without the financial security, without the money,
it's what you meant, but I want you to just be aware it's not what you said. And that's why I'm telling you, having done this over many different – for different groups of people, I see that difference. When I'm dealing with people who are in a career of people business where they're helping people, it's hard to get them to say that word, finance or money or wealth. And when I'm dealing with people who are more in the money business, that's always the first thing they say. So really what it comes down to is finding that balance. And you guys have to be okay with saying, hey, I want to come out of this program making more money. It's okay to say, I want to come out of this program making a lot more money. But remember what I said earlier. If you only prosper by helping other people, then don't you deserve it? And by the way, if you make more money than you're comfortable with and want to give some to charity, great. If you want to build a school, great. Nobody says you have to hoard the money. Nobody says you have to buy jewelry. But if you're helping people at a high level, and especially when you look at the broken medical model and you look at the broken healthcare system and you look at all of the dollars being wasted for no outcome or no positive outcome, and you're bringing a positive outcome, who deserves to get paid? You do. Think about this. If your business is throwing off $150,000 a month, but you don't have any time to spend with your family, you cannot find the time to exercise, you're eating poorly, your kids start to forget what you look like because you're at the office so much, would you consider yourself prosperous? And you don't have to answer me, of course not, right? Based on everything we spoke about. So it's not only about money, but money's a piece of it. a relevant piece of it. And the way that you become prosperous with a business like yours is you balance the reach, the funnel, the spillover. As big as your business gets, the formula works. You call me when you have 1,000 employees, and I'm going to tell you the formula still works. The reach, the funnel, the spillover. I would like you to think of a time you felt prosperous. Now, I'm not saying a time you really were rich. I'm not saying a time you really were living in affluence. Maybe it was or maybe it wasn't, but a time that you felt prosperous. Might have been a day that you hit it big in Vegas. You walked out with $200 more than you came with. Might have been a day you hit the scratch-off thing and you actually won $200. Or it might have been a day you got your tax return check and you were very happy because you looked in your bank account and you saw a big number. Might be a time you were able to afford something that you always wanted and you actually went ahead and bought it. Might be a time you were able to go on vacation, on a trip, exotic trip. Maybe a time you were able to go visit family because you were able to afford it and you had the freedom to do it. So I'd like everybody to lock in on a memory. There are two kinds of memories that we can access. And when we access these memories, we can use them as triggers. Triggers. Do you know somebody in your life who you really try to like, but you just don't? And they just get on your nerves. You know, sometimes it's like a friend of a friend, right? So you go, hey, you want to go out tonight? And they go, yeah, I'll bring in Bob. And you go, oh, no, not Bob. Sometimes it's a relative. You know, sometimes your cousin married somebody and you go, oh, I don't want to have to go see her. Sometimes it's one of your kids' friends, a neighbor, somebody at work, the person who works next door that always comes in and talks to you. Can you think of anybody who just gets under your skin? Just give me a yes. I'm not going to ask you who they are, but I just want to know, can you bring somebody to mind?
Yes. Yes.
What is it?
Yep.
What is it that creates that angst? Is it their voice? Like in the moment when that person steps into your world, something makes you feel that instantly, oh, get this person away from me. Is it the voice? Is it the smell? Is it the sense that they're just moving things around and touching things that they shouldn't? What is it? Sometimes it's a perfume. Sometimes it's a cologne.
Voice.
Voice. So if you hear that voice, even if the person isn't here, if I played that voice right now on the phone, do you think you'd feel that sense of, oh, no?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever have a very intimate moment or relationship and there's a popular song at the time? And you can think of a time that you were actually kissing somebody and a song was on, and now you hear that song and it might be 25 years later and it instantly takes you back there. So those things become triggers. Our brain holds on to those things and forms association. So instantly, if you hear the voice of somebody who irks you, even if the person's not there, you feel the emotion. Nothing has changed in your world except you're hearing the voice, and all of a sudden, your complete emotional state changes. When you hear the song, it brings you back to a time or a place. Sometimes you'll smell an odor. A perfume. And you go, oh, man, that reminds me of... And it really literally takes you back there. Because in your brain, in the hippocampus, you have what would equate to a massive filing cabinet that stores every single memory. Now, some are more accessible than others as time goes on. But they're in there. Which is why sometimes people remember things in hypnosis or suddenly they remember them years later because they weren't able to access that file and at a certain point with a certain stimulus they do. But every single experience that you've ever had stays in there. And the ones that are most accessible are the ones that are most linked with emotion. The more emotional the experience, the more accessible it is. If you've ever been really embarrassed, you know it was hard to shake that. Sometimes it took you years. Because you'd play it in your head. You'd see something that reminded you of it, and you go, oh, and you'd feel embarrassed, even though there's no reason to be embarrassed right now. So these memories affect our emotion, affect our state. When we change our emotion, we change our state, we change our behavior. So isn't it cool that there are certain files that you can access that become fuel for you? You just got to learn to access the right files. The monsters don't want you to. So I want you to search in there right now for a file that associates with prosperity. Tell me when you got one. Just say got one.
Got one.
Got it.
You don't have to, but is anybody willing to share it?
Sure.
Okay. Go ahead.
I won $200 off a scratch off, and it just, when I got out to the car and scratched it off and saw I won, it just felt cold because it was middle winter. So every time I'm in my car at that gas station, I just have that memory of winning the scratch off.
So now let me ask you, if in fact you got paid an extra $200 in 2016, would that make the difference as to whether or not you're prosperous?
No.
No. So it's not rational, correct?
Correct.
It is purely emotional. Even though it's not rational, even though most people wouldn't go, in that moment, he became prosperous. You feel the emotions associated with prosperity. And it's those same emotions you would probably feel if you did come into a windfall. Right? You at a higher level, but if you scratch it off and it said $2 million, you'd feel those same emotions. They would just be amplified. So realize that you can access that memory anytime you want and feel the feeling. You don't have to be at that gas station. It's in there. And we get better at accessing the memories we call upon. So sometimes at first they're cloudy. You can't get it clearly. You can't quite hold on to it. You know, it's sort of there and then it goes away. But the more you pull it up, just like the more you contact the heroes, the more your brain creates neural pathways directly to that file cabinet. So when you find that memory that you link with prosperity, it's got to feel good. I said there are two kinds of memories that we can access as triggers. One are the visions and the sounds and the feelings that are now stored in your hippocampus because you experience them. So those allow us recollections of past events and the associated feelings. But there are two kinds. What could the other kind of memory be? The other kind of memory are future memories. I know that sounds like a contradiction at first. Future memories. How could it be a memory if it hasn't happened yet? Well, you're going to use the technology of your brain. If you're going to create a future for yourself, if you really recognize that you have the ability to design your future, and you think ahead to, let's say, April 1st, 2017, and moving forward with this program, you get crystal clear on what things will look like and feel like and smell like on that day. You really crystallize what you want, and when you bring up that vision, you access the emotions of belief, you access the emotion of certainty, so you know your vision will become, when we get to May 1st, a month later, a memory, right? If you can envision April 1st and you get it locked into your brain and then you go, now let me go a month ahead of that, a month forward. Well, suddenly April 1st was a memory. Here's the beauty of future memories. We can script them. We can't script the past ones. They happened. But you can take what happened in that gas station and blow it up into a future memory with more emotion. You can write the script for your future memories. Now, why am I calling them future memories? Because if you lock them in and you get crystal clear, you can get your brain to store them in the hippocampus. You can get your brain to store them in the file cabinet of memories. And that's amazing that you can write your own memories. And when I tell you this is the most powerful thing I've ever learned in types of, in the realm of mindset, I mean it. You can write your own memories. Because when monsters show up, they pull the memories they want to. Now you have a different power. You write them. And if your brain starts to play and process these memories that haven't happened yet, you see them and feel them with absolute certainty.
Phil, can I ask you a question?
Please.
I hear exactly what you're saying. I totally believe what you're saying. I've seen incidents and episodes in my past where I've had such clarity that it, I mean, was almost textbook that it went right that way. And that's the, and I posted earlier on the web there, that's the, I guess the question I'm having, the problem I'm having is solidifying that clarity and knowing exactly where I want to be. I mean, I don't know if anybody's familiar with the book Conversations with God, Neil Donald Walsh, but in that book he was having a conversation with God and basically saying, you know, God, you say I can have anything I want, but, you know, I don't see it and I'm not having it. So is that not true? And he's like, no, it's true. You just keep changing your mind. And that's exactly how I feel. It's like, you know, oh, I want my practice to go in this direction. And but you know what? Maybe I want a little bit of this and maybe I want a little bit of that. And it just, the clarity is fuzzy and unfocused. And I feel that that's what's driving me crazy more than anything.
Do you write in a journal? Do you have a journal?
No, I don't.
Do you ever in your life, have you written a poem, a song, a manuscript, a play, anything? Have you ever written anything?
I mean, I've written, you know, there's times where I sat down and wrote out thoughts. I mean, I don't like a journal daily, but there's times where I
okay,
sat down.
Okay, I want you to picture, like, somebody writing a song. I want you to think of, like, a great song by a great lyricist. I want you to picture that person writing the song. It's probably rare that they just sit down and the lyrics come directly out of their head onto the paper. So what happens is they read it and they go, nah, I don't like this, and this doesn't really rhyme here, and I know girl and love are good, but they're too, and then I got to change it, and they cross it out, and they scribble, and they cross it out, and they scribble, and they cross it out, and eventually they get to the point, and they go, this is it, this is the work. That's what you have to do. And we're going to do something next month called the Max 10 System that will allow you to really connect with the hero focus in a way that you never did before. So I promise you that's going to have huge impact for you, the Max 10 System.
Sounds good. Appreciate it.
But for now, you're writing the script. And if you just let your brain wander, you deal with two things that we're going to address in the Max 10, brain clutter and mind pops. Brain clutter is the stuff that keeps circulating. Maybe it's something your heart doesn't really want, but you thought you wanted it before, so it's just circling around in your head, and it keeps popping up going, nope, this is the thing you're supposed to want. Mind pops are the things that happen suddenly. They just come out of nowhere. You're in the shower, and you go, I know what I want. You know, then you think about it later, and you go, I don't know if I really want that. So that's where you're at. So if you think of it like, okay, I'm going to start with the clay and shape it, start with a journal, and don't be afraid to cross out and start to develop clarity. And as you do it, you know, you're going to write something down, and in the moment it's going to seem great, and you look at it the next day, and you're going to go, nah, I don't really want that, but I do want this. You know, I don't really want that, but I do want a house with an organic garden. You know, I don't really want that, but I want to be able to ride my bicycle to work. And as you start to land there, you start to look at it and go, yup, that's, yup, I still want that. So if this were easy, we wouldn't be working on it. If it were easy to get clarity, you wouldn't be blocked. So I told you at the beginning, this is going to be hard at first. It's when you get the clarity that it becomes easy. So this is the hard part. This is the accessing the muscles you haven't used before. So if you think of it as a work in progress, don't let it frustrate you. Just pull yourself back. Use focus. Use discipline. Write in that journal. And sometimes you're going to feel like nothing's coming out. Nothing's in my head. Stay with it.
Will do. Appreciate it.
Okay. And you know what? I'm going to tell you this. Let's say April 1st. I'm going to write myself a note. I'm going to ask you if you have clarity.
Okay.
And if you stay the course, you're going to say yes. I don't think you'll have it tomorrow. But I think if we give it 45, 60 days, if you do what I'm telling you, you'll get there, and it will feel really good. Deal?
Big time deal. Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, thoughts on anything we discussed? All right. So when I work with executives, professionals at any level, and we have the initial discussion, what are we looking for? What would make you feel prosperous? What does prosperity look and feel like? When we have a conversation, we get past the idea of it being money and fulfillment, they almost always use a word, balance. For many, and this is at very high levels of success as well, executives and successful business people and successful health practitioners have trouble with balance. So when you go through the exercise of designing your ideal schedule, it's hard because you have difficulty because it all feels out of balance. So for some of you, you're trying to plan leisure time that doesn't exist for you right now. You know, I have this vision now. I have this idea of having some vacation time. And you're trying to plan it and fit it in your ideal calendar, but it's hard. And for others, planning marketing time is hard. You know, you're so caught up in your routine. Well, I know I'm supposed to do marketing. I know I have to work on my reach, but man, where am I going to fit this in my calendar? And if I do, how am I going to have time to do the other thing? Some of you struggle with finding time to handle administration. You hate it, so the distraction and procrastination monsters prevent you. Others find that when they commit to eating right and exercising, their income seems to be affected inversely because now they're less focused on work. So they're out of balance. I remember being in a roundtable group of people who were very, very affluent. And we went around the table and asked, what is the one thing you need the most help with? And they started to answer, and ultimately it all came down to the same thing, balance. They had struggling marriages. They had divorced not twice but three times. Hugely successful in business. And it's not what they wanted. You know, some people go, oh, look at him, he's just a womanizer, he's just marrying again. No, it's not what he wanted. But they just couldn't find the balance. So when I talk about balancing the reach, the funnel, and the spillover again, I'm not asking you to do something that's easy. I'm just telling you to do something that works. So here's what we have to start with when we talk about balance, and I don't know if anybody ever told you this. You are never going to stay in balance. That's not me putting a curse upon you. That's a fact. You are never going to stay in balance. Never. Will you be in balance? Yes, you'll pass through it, like a condition that you pass through. You're going to go, oh, I'm in balance now. Oh, now I'm out of balance. If something is too high and something is too low, you're going to work to bring the low thing up and the high thing down. Eventually, you're going to get there, and you're going to go, I'm in balance. And then they keep moving. You go, oh, nope, I'm out of balance. That's just the way it goes. So we're going to talk about the prosperity formula a little bit more. We're going to talk about balance, and then we'll move on and understand the concept of creative tension. Here's what I notice. Many of you are visited often by the negative talk, not only the negative talk monster, but the negative talk loop. The monster plants something, and you loop it. It comes up again and again and again and again and again. And that monster chooses the people it lets into your brain. So there are some people in your life who fuel your negative talk. They may be friends. They don't mean to do it. But they say things to you that just make you feel discouraged. They plant things in your head that the negative talk monster goes, this is a good one. I'm going to use this. Many of you are visited often. And the negative talk loop means once the monster plants it, he can go to sleep and you keep running the program. So in the future, we're going to talk about affiliation, the importance of it, and choosing who you surround yourself with. But for now, realize that you're going to gain the most power if you recognize the areas that you can personally improve upon. In other words, Sandy, if you think you need an accountability partner right now, you're telling yourself you're not accountable. And think about that. If you're saying, I need an accountability partner, what you're saying is, I'm not capable. I know this is not your intention, but this is the way your brain starts to understand things. In some areas, your brain is purely black and white. It is or it isn't. Your brain forms belief, and it creates these loops, and they cycle. And you're not always conscious of what the loop is saying until you recognize it and zero in, and you go, wow, I can't believe I'm telling myself that. So if you think you need an accountability partner, you're telling yourself you're not accountable without it. Conversely, if you prove to yourself that you can be accountable, even if right now your belief is you can't, if you prove to yourself, if your brain goes, whoa, wait a minute, she can be accountable, then an accountability partner helps you achieve higher, greater aspirations by holding you not only to what you set out to do, but also what you say you want to do. That's where an accountability comes in. The accountability partner will help somebody who is accountable to become accountable for greater things. But if you think it's a need, you got to work on your own first. In order to make this a truly valuable relationship, learn to hold yourself accountable for what you set out to do. Now, why would you not be accountable? Monsters, that's why. And there's one in particular, negative talk. And it creates these loops. And I want you to realize that you have the ability to command. For those of you who are personal trainers, you go, two more, right? That's a command. You're not asking. You're not going, hey, do you think maybe you could try to do two more? You don't do that. You command them. All right, come over here. I want you to do 15 of these. Grab the 10-pound medicine ball. You're commanding people. Okay, stand up. Good. I want you to try to raise your right arm. Ready? Go. Raise your right arm. Okay. I want you to lay down on the table. Go ahead, lay down. Turn over. Right? We command people. We don't think we do. We don't think we have that power, but when you really stop and think about it, we do, and they obey. So if we realize that people are responsive to commands, what that means is you yourself are responsive to commands. So use them with yourself, because the negative talk monster gives you negative commands. It creates the loops. It says to you, if you remember me talking about this with you, it says you need something else. That's the negative talk loop. You need something else. So you walk into your business every day and you go, you need something else. How could you ever feel good about your business if you need something else? You need an accountability partner. How could you ever be accountable if you have this need that is not being fulfilled? You're not worthy. You're not worthy. You're not worthy. We can command people and we can command ourselves. And there's a word we're very conditioned to respond to. And if you don't believe me, go stand in a grocery store or go stand in Target, go stand in Walmart, and just in a moment, just yell, stop, and just watch. Everybody will stop moving for a moment. They look at you like, what? But realize what you just did. You commanded and they listened because they're programmed. Everybody stop. They're going to stop. So here's what's really cool. You can tell those loops to stop. And some of what I share with you sounds crazy until you start to do it. So stop the negative talk loops. The practice in neurolinguistic programming is called thought stopping. It's real. It's powerful. You tell the thought to stop. You've got to identify it. This is the negative talk monster telling me I need something else. And literally out loud to your brain, say stop. And then where do you go from there? This is called a pattern interrupt. You stop the loop. And then you access the future memory. This sounds so simple and so silly, it's hard to believe it's as powerful as it is. You can stop the loop and write the script for your future. And right now, I want you to believe that you can move toward greater balance. I told you you'll never stay there, but you can move toward it. Ongoing, forever and ever and ever. And balance is not stillness. Balance is not a place where everything stops. Balance is a place where we have a coordinated symphony of movement. Everything's moving, but it's moving in the right way. In harmony with everything else that's moving. And it's a state. It's a condition we pass through, and then we strive for it again. Balance, whether perceived that way or not, is really hard work. Those of you involved in exercise, if you take somebody who's very used to exercising standing on the floor and you put them on an unstable surface, you see how hard it is for them to balance. The agonists and antagonists and stabilizers are all trying to figure out what do they have to do to stay on top of this thing that you put them on. It takes work. The nervous system works really hard to get to a place of balance. The nervous system works really hard to get to a place of muscular stability. So when you attempt to improve your body's performance ability, your balance is being challenged. In order for performance to be enhanced, the nervous system has to become involved at a higher level. So if you're going to get the reach and the funnel and the spillover and balance at first, it's hard. You've got to challenge yourself. You've got to fight monsters. What I love about taking people through this program is I know how hard it is right now, but I know where you end up. And it's just like that person when you put them on that unstable surface, you stand them on a BOSU, they can't do curls without tipping over. 3 months later, they're an acrobat. You guys are going to have to work right now at finding the balance I'm talking about. In order for performance to be enhanced, remember what I just said, the nervous system has to be challenged at a higher level. In order for performance to be enhanced, and I'm talking about physical because it translates, the output has to feel as if it's achieved with greater ease. In other words, at first you try to stay on top of something that's unstable and you can't. And you try and you can't. And then you try and then you can for 5 seconds. So suddenly it feels easier. And then eventually it's 20 seconds. And then a minute. And then 5 minutes. So the nervous system becomes conditioned. An optimal performance is when high output feels effortless. And that's what we're working toward. When the prosperity formula feels effortless for you, you find prosperity, or prosperity finds you. So right now, you're taking on something new, and it's not easy. In striving for balance, any performance athlete is moving and changing and growing, and he or she can never reach a point of true stagnation. So if that athlete wants to stay at the top of his or her game, that can only be achieved by continuous recruitment, continuing to challenge the muscles, the agonists, antagonists, stabilizers, assisters. If the athlete fails to provide that necessary challenge, then atrophy begins. So realize this. You're going to get better and better and better and better and better at this, but you still have to work it. It just starts to feel easier. So when we transfer the idea of balance from the muscular system, the human muscular system and the nervous system, to the prosperity plan, the reach, the funnel, and the spillover, you realize that you cannot stop movement aimed at betterment or your business starts to atrophy. But now you have a simple way to look at it. All you have to do is continue to improve upon the reach, the funnel, the spillover, and work to bring these things in balance. Business growth can only be achieved by continuing to make shifts and adjustments with the intention of achieving your prime, or if you're there, staying in your prime. And growth or betterment will always come from directing a heightened focus to the component that needs the most attention. So in other words, if you're getting really good with your reach, if 50 new people are contacting you every week, if your newsletter subscriptions are going up and up and up and up, and you're doing seminars, and you're getting 40, 50, 60 people at the seminars, but only one or two are becoming patients or clients, then you know you have to work on that end of it because your spillover is at zero. You've got to work on building the spillover. If your seminars are great and you've got three people showing up and you're getting three out of that, good. And if your schedule is full and you've got an apprentice, you got to work on your reach. So a heightened focus on whichever part of that system needs the most attention. And balance becomes an intuitive process. But you've got to work it first. Any thoughts, comments, questions? Because I covered a lot, and I've got a little more to cover, but I want to make sure you're receiving this. Because what I'm asking you to do, and I've said this many times, I'm going to say one more, and I won't say it again, it isn't easy. It's hard. But it's only hard for now. And I would not be putting in the energy and effort if I didn't know how valuable it is. So what I want to know is, do you believe me?
Yes.
Yeah, yes, it's, absolutely. It's good stuff, Phil. Yeah, and, you know, it definitely, I mean, obviously it takes a little time to digest in and all, but, yeah, absolutely.
And as I said at the very beginning of the... What's that?
I have a question.
Okay. Let me just say what I was about to say, and then we'll come to your question, okay?
Okay.
What I said at the beginning of the call, and I know not all of you were on at that time, but I said... Now you want to really start participating on the board, not because I want you to, but because you develop this resource of everybody else here and you get to know each other. So it's a really good time to post your struggles with balance and to start to use this language. And you know what? I need some help with my reach. You post it there, and somebody else who needs help with their spillover is going to go, let me tell you what I do. It's really great. It's really easy. So I'd like you guys to really start to do that because now, through this hard part, you're coaching each other. What were you going to ask?
Well, it's, I guess, more about the negative talk because, like, for me, I go so strong, go, 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 and then expect to see results. And after so much time passes by, whether it be a week, 2 weeks, a day, an hour, whatever, and I don't see any results, then it's like, okay, what the hell am I doing wrong?
Okay. And do you get an answer to that?
No, because it's usually I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Give me an example. Give me an example of something you're doing, go, 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 and you expect a result. Tell me what you're doing and what result you expect.
Well, I've been doing, like, for building my brick-and-mortar practice, I've been doing a lot of networking and doing presentations, getting out there, trying to get to know people as much as
okay,
I can.
Okay, well, let's go a little slower. Tell me what you mean by networking. Give me an example. Like, when was the last networking thing you did, and what was it?
I belong to several different women's groups.
Okay, give me one. Just give me the name of one.
The Professional Saleswomen of America.
Okay, Professional Saleswomen of America. So what do? You go to meetings?
Yes, we have a meeting every month, once a month, where it's a luncheon where we get together, we talk about networking, you know, get to know one another.
Mm-hmm.
We usually have a guest speaker and then go our separate.
Is the guest speaker part of the group or it's somebody from the outside?
A little bit of both.
Okay. And then what do you hope to get from this?
Exposure and clients, basically.
Okay. Well, if you got exposure but didn't get clients, would you be happy?
No.
Okay, so really what you want is paying clients, right?
Correct.
Okay, so how long have you been with this particular group?
4 or 5 months.
And in that 4 or 5 months, if you had to guess the total amount of time you've invested in these meetings, what would it be?
Maybe 5 hours.
Okay, in that 5 hours, how many clients? In that 5 hours, how many clients did you get?
None.
Okay. So here's what we have to figure out. Is it that the group is not the right place for you to get clients? Because that's quite possible. So if the approach is wrong, It's like if I say to somebody, oh, you want to lose weight? Here's what you do. Stand in your sink with water up to your ankles every day for 10 minutes. Right? And they do it religiously for 3 months. And they go, I didn't lose any weight. Well, obviously, the approach wasn't going to bring them the outcome. So it's possible this group is not going to bring you that outcome. That's one possibility. The second possibility is they don't understand what you can do for them. So somewhere you've got to make that determination, because if the group is not ripe, if it's not fertile soil, then stop investing time, because you could have better used that 5 hours, right? So I would go in next time with a plan and a measure. And if you start to look at all the things you're doing that way with a plan and a measure, then you can start to make those determinations. Because if you just keep throwing stuff out there and none of it's working, you're spinning your wheels. So is it possible for you to do the presentation at the next event, for you to be the guest speaker?
They've already got the guest speakers lined up, so no.
Is it possible for you to invite the women in that group to a separate event that you're going to conduct?
Yes.
Then do that. Create an event. It can even be a webinar. But what you want to see is, are these women listening to you? And one of the difficult things about networking groups is, unless they're massive, everybody's there with the same agenda. They want to build their business. In other words, nobody's there going, I'm looking for somebody who can help me with my thyroid issue. That's not why they join. They join because they want to build their advertising business. They want to attract people to their law firm. You know, that's why they join. So it's sort of like selfish people. Even though they may be nice, they're there with a selfish agenda. So they're not always the right place. But it is also possible they're not getting to know you and what you offer. So with all of these things that you do, a plan and a measure. So with this women's group, as an example, create an event. Create your own event. Maybe you do it in a little restaurant. And you say, I'm going to do a talk about whatever it is that you want people to learn. And the plan has to be, you get them to show up for the talk, and then you close some of them. So you've got to, along with that plan, go, if you sign up tonight, here's what I'm going to give you. Now, if you're willing to try that, at least you're investing time in determining whether or not these things are going to work for you. It sounds to me like right now they're not. Do you agree?
Yes, I agree.
Where would you say is your greatest gold mine of untapped clients right now?
I would say online, because I've tried locally and haven't grown, so.
You've tried locally and haven't hit it right.
Correct.
Don't stop trying locally. Tell me who you want to come to you. Not a name, but the type of person. Who do you want to come to you? What is their pain? What is their problem?
Women ages between 38 and 54 who have hormone imbalances, depression, low libido, low sleep quality.
And why should they come to you?
Because I've been there and I know how to fix it.
Okay. It's got to be one more piece. You've been there, you know how to fix it, and what?
I can help them.
Yeah. We'll take away the will. Say it again. I mean, take away the can and make it something else.
Oh, I
just gave you the word.
I will help them.
Right.
I can help them.
See, you've got to know that. You've got to know that, because that's the only way you're going to compel them, is if you operate from that place of belief. And if you're out there tentative and going, I'm going to try, but I don't know, nobody's really interested. I'm going to try this, but it doesn't seem to work for me. Then that's what you put out. And I know you don't realize you're putting it out, but I promise that's what you put out. So you've got to put yourself in front of an audience where you come with authority, and that authority says, I will fix you. Now, it's on you to live up to the promise. So I would really suggest that you spend a lot of planning time right now. That's an important hero for you. And you come up with a plan of action for the next few weeks where you test and assess all of the things you've been spinning wheels with. And rather than deciding it doesn't work, ask yourself the question, should I stop doing it, or can I do it better? That's a really good question. And if there are 10 things you do, 12 things you do, maybe you'll land on two that you can do better. And if the online thing is kind of where you're headed, then I think you've got to use the online thing to bring people in front of you. So if your reach is online, your funnel should be a seminar. You like to do talks?
Yes, I've got – actually, I'm scheduling a webinar for this weekend, and then I have a seminar that I'm doing in town at the Natural Grocers.
You said you want to build a virtual business?
Yes.
Why virtual instead of face-to-face?
Because I can reach more people virtually, and I can do more things. Like you were saying, I could talk to a group of 20 and actually do a group coaching program, whereas when I'm in my own practice, I can only do so much and so many hours a day.
All right. I don't want to bring this whole call to coaching you, but please, and I'm asking everybody here, coach her forward in the discussion group. Let's really work together on this, because there are some things that I think are obvious to everybody listening, and I think some simple shifts, ultimately, mindset shifts and actual shifts in what you do, are going to bring you to a different outcome. So I'm going to share my opinion, and then I'll ask you guys to respond, you know, on the discussion board. Some of you may disagree, some may agree, and let's put it out there and talk about it. My feeling is this. Unless you are an online marketer, unless you decide that's what you want to do, you know, you just love the computers and you love marketing online and you play the numbers, and I know people like that. You know, it's a game for them. They love it. They love trying different things and social media ads and seeing what they generate and looking at the percentages and how many do they attract and how many do they close. Unless you're that, I think the way to build an online business is to prove it first. It's to change 20 women. It's to, in your own area, find those 20 women, 30 women, and bring them back their lives. Because now you have stories. Now you have testimonials. And that's your power for starting to market online. But do it first in the real world. Change people, real people who you're meeting, who are hugging you and saying, thank you, you changed my life. Too many people are looking for the impersonal, simple way to connect online. And I think that's a good thing for you, because you should be working on attracting them personally. The women that you described feel broken and sad and down. Is that accurate? You said you were once there. Are those fair adjectives?
Yes, very much.
Okay. They want human connection. If they're signing up for something online, it's only desperation. It's hope. But they want human connection. If you get 30 of those women in a room and you have a compelling message and you help them believe that you can get them well, some of them will become clients. And all of a sudden, your mindset changes. No longer is it nobody locally has interest. It's, I'm getting better at this. So I believe right now you're too wishy-washy back and forth all over the place, and you have this idea of the virtual practice. You could still have that as a goal. I'm not taking that away from you, but I think the stepping stone is to prove it locally. How does that sound to you? And be honest. If you go, no, Phil, no way, that sounds horrible to me, tell me, but I'm curious.
No, I agree with you. I don't know. I've been trying to do that for the last year.
Okay, and you haven't done it yet. So you have to do things different and or better. And that's the way to look at it. Not why didn't it work. Why didn't it work will bring you a frustration, because, again, it's your brain looking for that answer. Why didn't it work? It didn't work because you're stupid. It didn't work because you suck. You know, it's looking for the answer to a question that you don't really want the answer to. So the question should be, how can I do this better? How can I do it different? And if you really stay focused, it's almost like you're setting a destination. You're just kind of changing your course based on the wind. And if you reach out to this group, and I'm asking everybody to be there for support and to help, once you do that talk for 10 women and two of them sign up, I think your whole universe changes. Because suddenly it feels like it's working. And if you can speak to 10 and get two, you can speak to 20 and get four. And if you can speak to 20 and get four and get better, then you can speak to 20 and get six. And that's the way it's going to evolve. And then when you have those 20 women who are hugging you and giving you the testimonials, then you have huge power to start something online, because everyone else wants to get what they got. I don't believe you're putting out the confidence. I'm not talking about arrogance. I don't want arrogance. But the confidence that you, in fact, will get people well. And I think when you start to do that, because you got to get to that place where you really believe it because people are responding, your whole world will change. Okay? Is that helpful?
Yes.
I appreciate you putting yourself out there like that. And ultimately, I hope everybody in this group is willing not only to do that when necessary, but also to help the rest of the group. So thank you for that. Any comments for her, by the way? Either in line with what I said or counter. Let me get just somebody else just to share an opinion.
So I definitely agree with what you're saying, and you know I can definitely emphasize with where Sandy's at because I kind of had the same concept, and I know I can feel where she's coming from because sometimes, like if I'm not being successful and I'm kind of in the same mode with some of the aspects with FM, and it's like I'm not being successful in this realm, and I figure. It's like always looking on the out. The grass is always going to be green on the other side. So if I go over there, I can do it. But I know in my heart that it's like, because I've had people tell me here in Philadelphia, you know, it's going to be very challenging to get the price that I'm looking for and what I want. And it's like it doesn't make sense to me. I see it as being me as the block that I'm not putting forth the confidence or the not I don't want to say the desire is there, the confidence or whatever it may be, but I agree with what you're saying is that, you know, I need to see what needs to be changed to do it better or do it differently.
You know, yeah, I've had many experiences where I've kind of learned these lessons about the power of mindset, and this just came to mind, is a lot of years ago I developed a program called The Body You Love, and it was a fitness exercise nutrition program, and it did really well. And I went on QVC, and the booking people at QVC said, we'll give you a chance, but these types of programs never sell. They never sell on QVC because people want like a tangible thing. They want a machine. They want a piece of clothing. They just don't buy, like at the time it was DVDs and CDs and books, and they just don't buy that. So they bought 1,600 copies of the program, and that's the way they do it. If they sell them, you know, then you get your commission, and if they don't, then they just send them back to you and nothing lost. So 1,600 they bought, expecting maybe to sell 200. So I went on that show, and QVC is amazing, but you're standing and you have a little earpiece and they're telling you what to say, and it's frustrating because you want to pull it out and go, look, I know what to say, I've been doing this a long time, but they're sort of coaching you, and there's a monitor in front of you, and the monitor doesn't say anything until you hit 500. So I didn't expect the monitor, because they told me that, so I didn't expect the monitor to go on at all, but suddenly I started talking about simple sugars and how simple sugar affects fat release, and the monitor goes 502, 508, 606, all the way up, it keeps going, 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 going. Anyway, they sold out of all 1,600 programs. So 2 weeks later, I'm sitting with an executive from Time Warner, and she said, women are the number one buyers on QVC, and they don't buy exercise programs. And I said, thank God I didn't know that because if I knew that, I never would have gone on. So when you look at people who go, it can't work, it doesn't work, this never happens, I see that as how can we do it differently so it does happen. And that's why I want all of you to look at your outcomes. You haven't achieved it yet or it wouldn't be a goal, right? So all of the aspirations, all of the wants, all of the future memories, you haven't achieved them yet. So like Sandy, everybody's in a place where you have this idea and you're not there yet. Doesn't mean you're a failure. Your idea might be super high. You might own a mega corporation, but you want to do something bigger. So you haven't achieved it yet. So you got to get rid of the voice, whether it comes from another person or your negative talk loops that says you can't. Realize that you have to do something differently or you have to do something better. And you'll figure it out. So tension and stress are two very important words. I love tension. I love stress. That doesn't mean I want too much of it in my life. I think the essence of positive physical change is a balance between stress and recovery. Lifting weights is stress. It is in the recovery phase that your muscles repair. cardiovascular exercises, stress, it is in the recovery phase that things improve. Stress and recovery. Sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic recovery. That's the essence of betterment. So stress or tension cannot really be called bad if we recognize that it is the stimulus for positive change. So why are so many people so afraid of this word stress? Well, because many people don't know how to get away from it and they have too much and it rules them. And or they don't know how to recover from it. So what makes people respond negatively to stress? Their interpretation of it, an emotional interpretation. The determinant as to whether or not stress is good or bad is kinesthetic. It's how you feel about it. It's an emotional interpretation of stress. In order to grow, in order to improve balance, we must face and respond to tension and stress. Creative tension is present in all thriving companies. I didn't say creative tension is present in all companies. I said creative tension is present in all thriving companies. And it is in part a driving force that must be there for progress to happen. Now, creative tension, in terms of interpretation or a kinesthetic interpretation, is the opposite of emotional tension. Emotional tension, even though we're still talking about tension, is a stress that leads to a negative drain on energy. Creative tension fuels you. Emotional tension drains you. And ultimately, emotional tension can destroy a being or a business. And some of you have had jobs in companies where you felt the emotional tension, and those companies didn't survive. You might have been a part of the whole bureaucracy and the anger and the finger-pointing, and you said, I'm getting out of here. Because emotional tension, like cancer, will kill an entity. And this is the great part. How you interpret stress and tension is in great part a conscious choice. So when I talk about this being challenging, if you're going, oh no, this is going to be so stressful, I have to think about how to do things differently, and I have to go out and meet people, and I have to start conversations, oh, this is going to be such a nightmare. If you approach it that way, it becomes an energy drain. You may not think you're making a conscious choice, but you are. You're choosing to interpret this as negative emotional stress. How you interpret stress and tension is a conscious choice. Peter Senge, who is the author of a book called The Fifth Discipline, describes creative tension as the gap between your vision and your present reality. The gap between your vision and your present reality. So here's what you have to do. You've got to start to get clear on an outcome. It's hard. I know you struggled. You're not there. I know. But you got to work. This is the tension. This is the stress part of it. You've got to work. And I'm not saying for a lot of time. This is not a major time investment. This is just asking your brain and mind to do little tricks that they haven't done before. It's teaching the person who's not a Navy SEAL to swim 14 miles. At first, it's really hard. It's teaching the person who's never done a backflip to do a backflip. At first, it's really hard. But when you get there, the payoff is massive because you get everything you want. Peter Senge also said in his book, The Fifth Discipline, lowering goals for a short-term sense of achievement is the beginning of a company's demise. This is important to understand. If there's a company and they have a goal of selling 1 million units, whatever that is, and they realize that they're only going to sell 50, and the goal was 1 million, and they have an executive meeting and they go, well, we don't want our guys to feel bad, so we're going to lower the goal. We're going to say the goal is 60. And then the company hits 60, and now everybody feels good because they exceeded the goal. Peter Senge says, this is the beginning of a company's demise. You've got to keep that tension, and you've got to use that tension to pull you toward the outcome, not lower it. If you lower the goal, the tension is less. Picture two big balls as if they're planets, and one is up higher than the other, and they're attached by a bungee cord. So if you take the higher planet and you move it further away, the tension in the cord increases. If we envision that as creative tension, it's pulling the lower planet toward it. If we bring the lower planet down, if we lower the goal, the tension's reduced, so there's no more pull. So you want to have that tension. If it is emotional tension, the bungee cord snaps. But if it is creative tension, it pulls you toward it. So rather than trying to reduce tension by lowering goals, effective companies and effective entrepreneurs and effective health practitioners thrive on the momentum sparked by creative tension. So right now, I want you to take this final thing we're going to do on the call today, and then I'll give you simple directives, and this is the beginning of one of them. I want you to take 2 minutes, stay on the phone, 2 minutes, and I want you to identify one source of negative stress in your life, and it has to be specific. You're looking to identify one thing that drains your energy. Don't ask me any questions about it, just anything that drains your energy. I want you to be specific. I don't want to lock you in on thinking in a certain direction, just one thing that drains your energy. Might be an employee, might be the state of your office, might be stress you're having with your landlord, might be a tug of war between your spouse wanting you to spend more time at home, might be things you know you need to buy that you can't really afford. Just say got it when you got it, just so I know where you guys are at.
Got it.
One source of negative stress in your life.
Got it.
Got it.
Now, I want you to consider that. Let me give another 30 seconds for those who didn't got it yet, so you can got it. Okay, I know it's uncomfortable, but I want you to kind of lock in on that right now. And here's the question I want you to ask yourself. Is it changeable? And this is very simply a yes or a no. Is it changeable?
Yes.
Yep.
That answer alone gives you power. The fact that you say yes, it's changeable means what? What is that? What power does that give you?
All the power.
Yeah, the power to change it, right? So the negative talk loop says, I hate this, 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 I hate this. The creative tension says, I can change it. Suddenly the entire perspective changes, and ultimately the outcome changes. Now, for those of you who said yes, we're done. Stop the exercise. You know what you have to do. You have to change it. You are already, just by saying yes, recruiting possibility thought patterns. You're in your prefrontal cortex. You're thinking of ways, and not to say they're all easy, but with a bit of focus and effort, you will be able to dismiss or reduce that source of emotional tension because you know it's changeable. That's a breakthrough. If the answer was no, if you looked at it and you just answered, not changeable, then ask a follow-up question. This is an important question. What would have to change in my life for this stress to be lessened? What would have to change in my life for this stress to be lessened? Because what we want to do is get you to utilize stress to move toward balance. But we want to make sure your stress is creative tension. We want to reduce the emotional tension. So as you start to separate things, as you start to go, yeah, I want this and I don't have it. That's exciting. That gives me a sense of desire. That's emotion. That's an emotion that leads to creative tension. It's a good tension. If there is emotional tension, negative energy drain, let's get it out of your life. So these are great questions. Is it changeable? If the answer is yes, change it. Hi. If the answer is yes, change it. If the answer is no, the follow-up question is, what would have to change in your life for the stress to be lessened? And if you ask the question enough, you'll get an answer. So here are two directives. And after the directives, I'm going to send you guys to do that. And I would ask you to just put some responses to Sandy, just what we talked about, on the board, just to get it started. It doesn't have to be a major focus, but I just want to create, I want to follow up on what we spoke about today. But before I share the two directives, any thoughts, comments, questions about anything at all that we covered today? Seems like a long time has passed since our last call because we're dealing with holiday season. But now they're going to feel closer together, so you're going to feel a greater sense of momentum. But any questions you have right now, or thoughts or comments? Okay, then here are your directives. One, identify the gap between something you want to achieve and your present reality. Identify a gap between something you want to achieve and your present reality. We're beginning to use creative tension. So I asked you in the past to start to really think about what you want. We started with a micro goal, and then I said, I want you to think of an outcome that's thrilling to you. Well, now I want you to start to envision that second planet, that higher planet. That's the want. What's up there? What is it that you want to get to? And then I want you to start to recognize the gap. And that gap becomes the bungee cord. And you're going to move along that cord. It's going to pull you there, but you got to get really clear on what there is. So really now start to crystallize. And again, I know some of you, Clarity Hero is hard to access. You know, I'm working on it. Keep working on it. You got to get there. It's an important piece of this. Get clear on what you want. And then start to recognize the gap between that and where you are now, and that becomes your source of fuel. In a few months, I'm going to partner you guys up, and you're going to work together. Everyone in the group will work together to create a profit center. Everybody in the group will make more money because of that exercise I'm talking about. And you're going to use this concept of creative tension to coach each other. So this is the beginning of you starting to understand it. So up on top, it's what you want. Down below is where you are. The gap between them is creative tension. And we don't want to leave that as a gap. We want to take a bungee cord and attach the two and use that tension to pull you forward. So you've got to start to get clear on what's up there and how great is that gap. The second directive, take a little time to list 10 sources of emotional tension. It's exactly the exercise I just asked you to do. That was a practice. So we're creating the creative tension, which is going to serve you. But now you want to start to look at all of the emotional tension in your life, and let's change it. So list 10 sources of emotional tension. And after you have your list, just check it. Categorize it. Is it creative tension? If so, it's good. Or is it emotional tension? If it's an energy drain, it's bad. And for each one, ask yourself the questions. Is it changeable? And if the answer is yes, you know what to do. If the answer is no, what would have to change in your life for the impact to be lessened? Please don't neglect the directives. And I promise you, I don't choose these randomly. I've been at this for a long time. These things have extreme value, especially when we stack them up from call to call to call. So stay the course. So take the directives seriously. 10 sources of emotional tension, you're going to erase them from your life by going through this exercise. So in closing, always seek a heightened sense of kinesthetic awareness as to where you stand between the reach, the funnel, and the spillover. You're working to create that balance and raise it up at a higher level. That's not the entirety of what's up there that you want to move toward, but that's a piece of it. That's your business. That's the prosperity that your business brings. So always seek a heightened sense of where you are with your reach, your funnel, your spillover. And then whichever one's lacking, give it some more attention and move it forward. And if we progress in this way, when I said earlier you will have a power, you will really have the power to write the script for your future memories and make them happen. I'll watch for your posts on the board. I'll chime in whenever asked to. Until we speak again, which will be soon, be better, everybody. Bye-bye.